The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Demand Exchange. Demand Exchange provides the technology, content, and expertise to identify and acquire your next ideal customer. Season 2, Episode 2, recorded live at Advertising Week Europe, features Christopher Hogg, Chief Revenue Officer of Lotame, in conversation with Justin Cook, Chairman of Demand Exchange.
Good afternoon and welcome to Advertising Week Europe London. I am delighted to be here with Chris Hogg, who's the Chief Revenue Officer of Lotame. Good afternoon, Chris.
Hi, well, thanks for having us. Afternoon.
So really appreciate you coming and stopping by. Very excited about this conversation. So first of all, give me a little bit of a kind of career journey to date. How did you get to becoming Chief Revenue Officer of Lotame?
Yeah, that's a good question. I get asked this a lot. I've been with the business for 11, coming up 12 years now. So I've been there a while. Previous to that, I was also a customer for a couple of years. So I feel like I've had a relationship with Lotame for at least 50% of my work in life. But yeah, as I say, I used to work for France Telecom. We brought them in, Lotame, in to do with our audience management. We're kind of the first to put in what was now known as sort of an audience management platform, or DMP, in Europe. From there, I moved across to set up the European business. I set the office up in London for Lotame, and I'd say, yeah, 11 years on, still going strong, and always innovating as a business. And it doesn't feel like I've been here for 11 years, if that makes sense.
I love it. The world's moving so fast; it always keeps things interesting. Yeah. So, in a nutshell, tell me, really, what do you do? What problem do you solve?
Yeah, so I guess what our mission is, to basically help our customers grow as a business, but through the value of their data. So that's how do they deploy that data quicker, smarter, faster, to get business results. Whether that's a brand marketer trying to re-engage an existing customer or find their next best one, or whether that's from the supply side, our publisher clients, monetizing the content and the inventory that they work so hard to produce, helping them with their data assets to drive revenue.
And what trends and opportunities in B2B are exciting you at the moment?
Yeah, I guess today, I would say a CMO or even brand marketers in general, I think they've got one of the most difficult jobs in the industry. I think you only have to look at some of those Lumascapes. There's like 14,000 pieces of technology that could potentially help them. And I think being able to build a technology stack that really does, drive value from the audience data, is not always the easiest thing. There's lots of shiny new objects, et cetera, come to the market. And it's really kind of understanding how best to put together a technology stack for the desired use cases and services that they require.
And when you think about that stack, how is that evolving? Go for it.
Yeah, I guess from, the CRM is generally the beating heart for a brand marketer. That's where their data journey starts. But I think, brands are becoming even more aware that the CRM is only one part of it. There's lots of traffic that does not disclose themselves on digital property. So it's really about understanding what technology you need for different use cases. If you're a brand, you could quite easily spend all your money in the walled gardens, but you're missing out on 2/3 of the attention on the internet, which comes from the open market space, the open internet. So you need tools as well that can operate through there. Overlay, big technology decisions from big technology companies, and then overlay sort of government and legislation. It becomes a difficult ecosystem for people to navigate through, and need to find partners that will help them do that, either by guiding them to use the software and solutions, or by offering them services that makes those jobs a lot easier and they get the desired outcome.
Now, your title right now is CRO. Tell me a little bit about the relationship between the CRO and the CMO.
Yeah, that's a really great question. And at the moment, I'm actually temporary CMO as well, I guess, for Lotame. So I'm one in the own, but no, I don't call myself, I'm not a CMO. My my value is on the revenue side, and I look after the marketing team temporarily while we're looking for a new CMO. But I think they have to work very close together, and you know, that's one thing I strive. And you know, we were talking earlier offline about, you know, that whole customer journey and driving people through your digital assets to actually have communications and stories with them. And that's what all of our brand marketer customers and what our agencies are striving to do with how can we pick up that important information, that footprint that customers or potential customers are leaving behind on the digital footprint, whether that's declared through registration or form submission, etc., or whether that's through their behavior and their intent of what they've been looking at on your digital properties. And all of that is valuable to get the end result. And we're no different as a business. You know, our digital ecosystem, our real estate is one of our most, you know, important assets that we have. In terms of selling our technology, the same as our clients, you know, it's another salesperson, it's a shop window to our business.
And that's really interesting, because we were talking offline, as you said, and you cited some really great sort of approaches to sort of, you know, driving demand and lead generation. Can you expand a little bit on that? Be great to kind of hear how you go about it yourselves when it comes to kind of really trying to lead in the market today.
Yeah, and I guess there's a suite of tools that we use. You know, obviously social is a big part of that. You know, some platforms work better than others for us. Obviously, we're in the B2B space, so you know, our focus is to get to professionals in the digital advertising ecosystem. So that's a big decider on where we do our social. Search is again a huge piece, but you know, even from us, from our own things, you know, we're also running display advertising, we're booking campaigns with leading sort of trade press, etc. We're running our own, you know, sort of outbound marketing campaigns as well, whether that's through email or other attention you know, platforms where we can drive visitors through our website, and again have those conversations and let our website do some of the selling for us and leading prospective customers, or you know, even current clients, you know, to uncover the benefits and the services that we can offer our customers. And hopefully the end goal is they reach out to you looking for your services, and you know, you've got a very warm opportunity where, you know, you've driven enough value through your thought leadership and your outbound marketing that they've come to you to seek advice and take that journey with you in terms of looking at what you can offer them.
And how do you navigate, you know, what appears to be a kind of ever-increasing buying committee, as well as the stage that they're at? How do you do that?
Yeah, that is probably not true words said, that, you know, selling into organizations, it is by committee now, and that's for multiple reasons. One, that's, you know, these are big decisions companies are making. It's not just, hey, I'm going to buy a piece of software for advertising. It's, hey, I'm going to buy a piece of software that touches consumer data. So I need my data privacy officer involved. I need my legal teams involved. I need my procurement teams involved. Probably want to get three or four consensus from my business, so I'm not the only one making the decision. So it does very much become a sell by committee these days in terms of selling software and services. But it's understanding who's in front of you and tailoring your content to be appropriate for those different roles and use cases. You know, even down to when you're dealing with legal teams, they understand their business, you know, inside out, but they might not understand the digital advertising ecosystem. So again, you know, you need content to bring them down that line as well, in terms of understanding why we're asking certain things and why they might be pushing back on certain things. So it's very interesting interesting space today in you know, especially the contractual part of business that can take sometimes just as long as, you know, the sales part ahead of that. So yeah.
And different types of content at different types of the stage in the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, even through the prospecting phase before they've, you know, engaged with a human at your business, you know, you put content out there, sort of top of the funnel, and you start to bring them down that that funnel in the decisioning process. Also, you've all, you know, it'd be lovely if we were the only platform out there and we weren't competing against any competitors, but you also have to understand, you know, those stages and where you might need to interject some additional stuff, and, you know, manage objection handling and have content and stuff ready for that as well. And yeah, absolutely.
And you were talking earlier about you've taken a, I think, really interesting approach around sort of the use or not use of gates.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, we put everything behind a gate because we wanted email addresses.
Of course,
and
right.
That was, you know, we want to be able to send out information to them or book meetings. And I think, you know, as a business, we've navigated from not putting barriers in the way to have you know, our content viewed and our thought leadership sort of pieces read to, okay, let's ungate everything. You know, we can't force, it's not a blunt object to force people into our pipeline. They need to get there on their own steam. So the only way we can do that is to actually take them on a journey. And if the first stage of a journey is a gated and you're asking them for lots of information, then potentially you're not setting the right tone. So we've ungated all of our content, users come in and we take them on a journey for our digital properties, as I mentioned earlier, with the end goal that actually they're ready to reach out and have a conversation, with one of our sales representatives. And, you know, again, you know, there's multiple products and different things that we sell, and we can take them down that right path and also bring them to the right person to speak to with inside the business. So it's not as if they're starting again and having to explain, you know, what they want from us and what they need from us.
And when you think about the marketing team at a high level, how have you kind of structured it for success?
Yeah, so we kind of split the marketing team into sort of three core verticals. One's demand generation. So that's, you know, all of our SEO, that's our search, that's, you know, all of our SDR sort of activity, all of that content. And then we've got what we would call the creative side. So it's teams that manage our PR agencies. It's teams that write all of our content. It's all of our branding and design aspects sit within a team. They work very closely with the demand gen. Then lastly, we have what we would call product marketing that brings in, they look at competitive intel. They'll work alongside the product team for new launches and stuff that's coming down the funnel to make sure that sales collateral's in place, that we've got the go-to-market positioning for it. And then obviously it feeds into the creative, it feeds into the demand gen and so on. And some of those changes we put in last year, some of these changes we put in early this year, and we're already starting to see results in terms of having a more focused pipeline of opportunities for our sellers to talk to.
And is that where the third pillar, is that where the data is and where it's turned into insight?
Yeah, so that would be in the demand. Demand gen side would generally turn the data into insight. Obviously, that would influence some of the creative stuff. And I'd say the product marketing, it's kind of, yes, we do want to get information back into that team, because then that feeds back into product team. And, you know, so it's also about innovating the products to as well. You know, we try and do as much as we can to make sure we got the right product fit. But again, being, you know, flexible, independent business, we can also adapt as we're getting that information back into the business. And that'll either come through clients, it will come through the sales funnel, etc., back into those teams, whether it's slight change to how we market things, or whether it's, hey, or we slightly missed the mark, or we need to tweak the product a little bit to further and home improve the use cases that it's been put out to market to solve.
And how important is it to have that connection between sales and marketing and product?
Oh, well, I think it's hugely important, and obviously one I've lived firsthand this year whilst whilst having a foot in both the marketing and the sales camp. You know, I think I worked very closely with marketing before, but it's really taught me that I didn't, and I need to work more closely. You know, so it's very interesting. You know, I think that is definitely a place for people to start to look at. You know, are you working with the marketing teams as close as you think you should be? And yeah, 100%.
things are changing, and you've already talked about some of the changes you've made, and you know, that's great to hear how you're continually evolving. How do you foster that sort of culture of growth and innovation within your teams?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I always joke a little bit that you know, Load2Me is an independent business. You know, in the ad tech space, we've been around for a long time. So we, you know, 18 years young. I like to say, but you know, being able to have that flexibility to actually look for innovation, look for opportunity, I think that can come with an independently owned business. And you know, we're about 150 people globally, so you know, we have enough. And we can't call ourselves a startup anymore. We're certainly not a big sort of corporate. I like to think that we're in our teenage years. You know, we've done enough growing to have process and you know, to keep our staff happy and our clients protected, but you know, we're still agile to learn and be flexible enough to innovate and continue to deliver products. And I think it's testament to our business that, you know, we've remained relevant for 18 years, and you know, we've always been delivering services that our customers need to actually generate money and manage their audience.
And here you are at Advertising Week Europe. Obviously, you know, natural question is where do you personally get your inspiration from?
Yeah, well, I guess it's you know, I'd come to these things for multiple reasons. Some of it is the obviously the networking, come to catch up with customers that are in town, potentially speak to the odd prospect or two. Always keep an eye open for opportunity to do a bit of selling. But the stages and the content, I love hearing from you know, brands and marketers and agencies and publishers and what their challenges are. It gives me inspiration to, you know, take that back to the business and look at how we can solve some of those challenges. But also it's just hearing how the market is flowing and the innovation. You know, as I say, we've 18 years old, we've come through that whole audience management space, a DMP. You know, our technology's naturally innovated into the data collaboration space. And you know, we can't do that as a business if we're not, you know, with a finger on the pulse of the industry, and events like Advertising Week is a perfect window to get that feedback.
And obviously, with an oversight across marketing and of course revenue and sales, how do you think about measuring the success of your initiatives? You
know? So there's probably something that, you know, I've learned a lot sort of last year, is how much measurement actually does go into, you know, what we're doing, and, you know, the little tweaks and stuff that you make to campaigns or changing things. Like, did that give us an uplift on, you know, traffic to our website? Did that give us an uplift on the form submission or the contact us submissions? To, you know, how many keywords did we win? Are we number one on the search for this? And so we're always measuring and sort of looking at the things that we do. Are we changing the pulse? But I think also you can get a little bit too carried away, you know, with some of that as well. So it's about looking at the creativity as well as the you know, have I moved up one space in search, or am I actually having meaningful engagements with the customer? And sometimes less is more if it's the right type of traffic that you're bringing through to your property. So you've always got to balance the two.
How important is creativity in B2B?
I think it is important. You know, with anything, we're brands. Our brands need to resonate with our target market. To do that, you do that through creativity, whether that's, you know, putting a spin on a display campaign, or whether that's, you know, poking a little bit of fun at yourself sometimes and on certain platforms, you know, just really sort of being creative in terms of how we gauge that attention. You know, it all impacts for, you know, having a brand presence out there.
And how do you think that's going to change or evolve through sort of, you know, the next sort of range of kind of disruptive technology? I mean, obviously ChatGPT, another release yesterday evening, you know, for us. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, our marketing teams, you know, were very early to sort of look at AI and how it can support them in the background, whether it's creativity, whether it, you know, our lead designer the other day, chief designer, was talking about how she's using AI to create images and stuff that she can't get from stock photos. And so, you know, we're always playing with it, whether it's, you know, introducing chatbots to our digital properties. You know, this year we introduced, we call it Lottie, you know, just again, a little bit of fun, not taking ourselves too serious, but, you know, on our website, and, you know, obviously just looking at the different ways you can do it. And, you know, our product marketing will have conversations with AI to just to kind of start homing our message, and also to see what else is out on the internet. They're great search functionalities to throw in a question and kind of spit out and get a sense of what the industry is already talking about. So there's a huge amount that you can do, and you know, we're probably only scratching the surface, you know. But yeah, I think these tools are, people worry about them, but I think they're actually here to help us, like any evolving industry. You know, it's how you apply them and the use cases that you look to support with them.
Yeah, and enable and empower our teams to be able
absolutely.
To do more.
Absolutely, to be able to do more. Again, you know, quicker, smarter, faster, and yeah.
It was really interesting hearing about sort of that sort of kind of process and journey that you've set up around, so, you know, you have heavy use of automation, but also how do you get that balance right between, you know, using the tech, but then still really, I suppose, in a sense, you know, unlocking the value of human connections. And you talked about sort of, you know, at what point does a human connection come with a prospect or a customer?
Yeah, well, I think as well, and, you know, I'd say we're in a very different business environment than we were like 3-4 years ago, mainly due to COVID and, you know, sort of the remote working. A lot more is done over screens today. You know, I would say probably before, you would get on a plane a lot earlier to go and meet a prospective client than you do today. You know, that's kind of something you start to do towards the end of the engagement, end of this kind of the sales relationship into a new client. So, but I think it's still hugely important, whether it's in person or whether it's through devices, to have that human connection, or even your marketing to be human in terms of its vocabulary and how you're talking to your potential customers.
And obviously, you know, we talked already about sort of, you know, the mix and so forth. Where do you see the kind of potential for growth in terms of using new channels to get, you know, kind of your message and execute your strategy from a B2B point of view?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure I've got the most amazing answer for it. But yeah, it's just trial and error. You know, we're always looking at testing new things and, you know, trying to work out how we can, you know, record the success. Sometimes even getting their hands on the measurement metrics is very difficult. So you have to kind of find ways to, okay, I can measure this, I can't measure that. Is that good enough? Is it, you know, is it going to give me enough insight into whether to continue to do what we're doing? And I guess sometimes you have to fail fast and move on, you know, those learnings into, you know, before you know it, the, you know, time goes by and you've just got to get some stuff out the door, and, you know, you've got to find ways to measure it, or you've got to move on.
And how's the prospecting journey evolving? That for me is really interesting at the moment, because I read a post yesterday, someone said, you know, LinkedIn's become Facebook and Facebook's become LinkedIn, you know. So, you know, at what point do you sort of think about the mix and go, well, actually we should be, you know, our prospects, our customers are, you know, consumers too, right? So
yeah,
where are you on that line?
Yeah, we do chop channels and stuff that we down prioritize certain channels that we just feel isn't where our audience are. So you know, for instance, going back to that sort of social, we do an awful lot on LinkedIn, and yep, we probably put more fun stuff out on Facebook, and you know, we've probably dropped Twitter, you know, yep, of recent, where just, you know, the audiences were declining and we weren't seeing as much value. What I say drops probably is probably harsh. We sort of down prioritize where we spend some of the time. So it is about moving around and testing new things. And as I say, we are looking for a B2B audience. So there are certain limitations around what platforms we will and, you know, we can use. But again, it goes back to that image. You know, we can be more playful on something like Facebook, and we have to be a little bit more sensible on LinkedIn, because it's a business audience. And Facebook, yes, our business audience is there, but they're in a different mindset or a different mood set in terms of how you can interact with them on on that platform. So we might talk a little bit more about, you know, us as a social business, like what we're doing socially and what stuff we're doing, you know, for good causes and charities and stuff, you know, might be favored in terms of one platform over another. So it really depends on the message we're getting out.
Yeah. And let's talk about teams. And yeah. you talked about the structure, which is great, really interesting, the way that you've sort of thought about that. What about the sort of the talent itself in those teams? What sort of qualities do you look for when you're trying to build a high performing team?
Oh, that's a very good question. And maybe I'm very fortunate. I inherited a very good team in the marketing. So I'm not personally hired into the marketing org this year, but if I looked at it from how do I build a team in general, you know, the first thing I look for is attitude. You know, has this person got the right attitude? Does he present the brand values that I'm looking for in a certain team? And also where you know, it's so easy to go and build a team that looks exactly like yourself. You know, if you did that, you know, surefire, you know, for failure. You need a good balance. I also look to see what balance I'm missing. You know, is there certain characteristics, or is there certain attitudinal things, or is there certain skill sets that I need to have a balanced, you know, thought set within the team of tackling challenges in different ways and coming up solving problems in different ways. So generally, and I guess that would be no different than if I were hiring in the marketing org and then the sales org, I'd look for those characteristics.
And I think that attitude is really critical, isn't it, at the end of the day? From a kind of skills perspective and from a competence perspective, what do you think, you know, like you look at yourself and looking at the team that you have, which is great that you've got a high-performing team. What are those skills and competencies that you think really kind of shine through that really enable that kind of performance in marketing and sales?
Yeah, and I would say, again, you know, depending on what sort of role, if it was more creative, you know, I'm looking for that creativity. I'm looking for that little bit of flair, that ability to, you know, communicate and how do we put our brand messaging out there. If it's more in demand gen, I'm probably looking for a little bit more analytical, orientated people that, you know, can look at the numbers and, you know, how are we changing the dial in terms of by making small changes. So there's an element of looking for experience. And if it's more junior people, it's like, okay, it's the attitude. How can I train? Are they trainable for the experiences that we want?
And you've obviously been, you know, inside the organization now for some time. How yourself have you kind of thought about your personal and professional development?
That's a good question. And I've never really felt it, like, never thought about it, if I'm completely honest.
Yeah.
You know, people ask me a lot of the time, like, well, that's 11 years you've been at the company, you know. And I always say, yeah, it doesn't feel like 11 years. And it doesn't feel like I've been sort of going from, you know, one ladder to another ladder. It feels like it's been organic, an organic evolution through the business. From first sort of setting it up, you know, it was a little bit like, okay, this is a little bit like my business, you know, this side of the world, and, you know, sort of building that up for loads of me, and then obviously moving across to look after it globally and, you know, do some of the stuff I did in America into some of the other markets. So I always say that there's always been a reason for me to stay and take on the next challenge, and that's kind of how I feel about, you know, being at loads of me. There's more challenges to solve, and you know, it's a great environment to do it in.
Yeah, I mean, what a privilege that the company has grown to enable you to grow.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we look at, you know, the product and stuff that we have, and sometimes, you know, we're a little bit ahead of the curve. You know, we had clean room technology before it was even a label. You know, so we're always innovating and, you know, sort of bringing that next sort of set of technology to the market.
And what's next? You know, what are you really looking to kind of crack next?
Yeah, I would say I think we're moving into, you know, an area in our market that where partnerships and collaboration is just key. I think the industry is kind of turning itself upside down a little bit, and, you know, the relationships that businesses have and the ability to make data collaborable across that ecosystem is really where we're aiming at, whether that's from offering services to be able to do that on behalf of our customers, whether that's offering them technology solutions to do it themselves, or whether that's through us, you know, helping them forge partnerships. And I would say, you know, from my point of view, working for a business that touches both the supply and the demand side is going to be hugely important as we move forward, because those relationships are going to be critical for success as the open internet becomes challenged in terms of addressability.
You've obviously made the shift, as you said, into this global role. How is that different to the role that you had before? You know, what is different about having to think globally as opposed to your previous role?
Yeah, then I guess the fundamentals remain the same. It's just doing it on a larger scale. I guess market differences. Mm. You have to sort of keep an eye on that. And I always look at market. I get sort of comments. My market is different, and yes, every market does have slight differences and stuff, but they're on an evolution curve. Mm-hmm. Generally, all markets get to the same position at some point, and it's the level of maturity. Right. So it's where is this market on that maturity curve, and in terms of take a benchmark, they're probably a year behind, where this market is, etc. What were we doing a year ago here? And it's looking at the market maturities, also looking at sort of culturally as well. There's different things you need to be aware of when doing business, but really it's not overcomplicating it. Yep. For the market and the maturity of the market.
And is market maturity another factor in the way that you go to market? So, tell me more about that.
Well, we try to, we can't have a go-to-market in every country. So, we have to sort of roll things up. So we try to have a go-to-market strategy that is global, but then we adapt it for certain regions. And it's generally regional rather than countrywide. So we'll start to adapt it. We'll start to soften it. We'll start to sometimes don't even have certain products, like this product's not for this market at this stage. So, we also tailor what we sell in each region. And again, like all businesses, we have strengths and weaknesses. Some markets we have, really, really strong products. Another market, this product's not quite there yet. We need to do a little bit more business development, et cetera, to do that. So all of that goes into that as you're working. And then again, having great country managers and teams actually out in the regions that feedback all this information and help you mold those decisions.
Lastly, just a simple question for you, really, I suppose, which is, from a B2B marketing perspective, what are you most excited about right now?
I think, one thing that I've always, sort of enjoyed and pride myself is just the fast pace of our industry. There's always something new, and I think we're probably entering a point within, especially the digital space, where, we've had to stop. We've had to have a little think, are we on the right course? There's a lot of people suggesting that we're not, as an industry, and we might have gone a bit too far in certain areas. And I'm excited to see what the next generation of ad tech, martech, or digital marketing, and what that looks like. How much does AI is going to influence it? Are we still reliant on email addresses? Will the cookie go away or will it not? Google keep promising it, but I might be sitting here back here next year and you'll ask me the same question. It's like, yeah, it hasn't changed at all, but I'm excited to see what that next generation, that next 10 years that we're shaping now is gonna start to look like.
Chris, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Demand Exchange. Demand Exchange provides the technology, content, and expertise to identify and acquire your next ideal customer.